So moving on in the history of US women's rights from the 1960s, after the foundation of the National Organization of Women, we had, I chose this example because it's symbolic, and it is the first woman to run the Boston Marathon. Of course, now marathons today are extremely popular. Enormous things. You've seen the New York Marathon. The huge. They were not so popular in the 60s. You would have a few hundred people, not thousands, a few hundred people. And the rule said it's only for men. And to be frank, not many people were shocked. That was the situation. And so what did Bobby Gibb do? Well, she just wrote a letter to say, I want to, and of course it's Bobby Gibb, and of course, Bobby, you cannot tell if it's a man or a woman. It's a fairly neutral name, Bobby. And so she ran the marathon. It's something that today, you know, if one of your older friends runs a marathon, you say, oh, that's really good. She had to run this marathon with people insulting her as she ran along the marathon. It was a big deal. Yeah, it wasn't some little, oh, I ran a marathon. Yeah, she wrote about her experience, and she said she realised that she was obliged to finish. Yeah, she couldn't collapse on the way. She wanted to collapse on the way, but it was such an important symbolism. And that was the first woman to win the Boston Marathon. And as you can see, 5 years later, the Boston Marathon changed the rules, and they said, oh, okay, we can have women again. And I think it's a good example of these small battles, hundreds of small battles, but they're important. Even hundreds of small, really what she wanted to, she didn't really want to, she wasn't aiming at becoming a national political women's leader, she just wanted to run a marathon. And that's, we will see more of this when we look at football later on. I was mentioning to you that the question of equal pay was not so simple, and very often had to be tested in the courts, in the tribunals. It was necessary to push employers to stop using different ways to avoid the problem. And here are a couple of court cases. Perhaps you know the United States political system is very dependent on the courts. The courts are very, very important. Of course, the Supreme Court makes decisions which apply to every parliament in every state. And very often about interpreting. The courts are there to interpret laws. So, for example, in 1970, this important case, Schultz versus Wheat and Glass. Wheat and Glass then is the company. And the court said, jobs do not need to be identical in order to deserve equal pay, but substantially equal is enough. Okay, and this is the question of, you have you have men and women doing the same job, and you just give their job a different name and pay the woman less. Yeah, this is to avoid this. And these are things which took time. 1974, the Supreme Court this time argued that the employer's arguments could not refer to the going market rates. That is to say that if employers said, I am obliged to pay this job more because men won't come if I don't pay more than the women, then this was not an acceptable argument. And that went right up to the Supreme Court. So, of course, it went through one court, then another court, and another court. The Supreme Court. Perhaps you remember the Supreme Court. Who are the judges on the Supreme Court? How long do they stay for? If you are a Supreme Court judge, how long do you work as a Supreme Court judge usually? Until you die. It's a permanent position. You cannot be sacked. You are not elected. You are chosen by the president. And when you're chosen by one president, the following president cannot sack you. It's a permanent position. And so until you retire, and they retire very old, you know, if you're really in bad shape, or actually die. And so that, of course, the Supreme Court judges are extremely important people. I can't remember how many there are. 9, 11, something like that. Every time a Supreme Court retires or dies, then the president has a chance to Well, we lost a Democratic kind of judge. Let's have a Republican, or the other way around, yeah? So these are very, very important moments. No political movement can really exist without a regular publication. Yeah. If you don't have a regular publication, I'm talking about before the internet. This is a little bit more complicated today with the internet. But certainly before the internet, if you didn't have a regular monthly newspaper or magazine, you didn't really exist. And this was founded in 1972. Ms. Magazine, Ms., as I think you know, is the form of address used in English to refer to all women. Traditionally, you had to say Mrs. or Miss. Are you married or are you not married? If you're married, you're Mrs. Smith. If you're not married, you're Miss Smith. Now, this has been interesting because in France, Mademoiselle is relatively in decline. It's not disappeared, but it's relatively in decline because in France, the idea of saying Madame for women who are married or not married is becoming common. Whereas in English, Mrs. was always really just for married women. And the interesting thing about Ms. is it's one of the very, very few examples where a group of people said, we want to change the language, and then they were successful in changing the language. Usually, if you want to change the language, well, that's your problem. You know, the language is a huge, enormous thing which does not move very quickly. And this is the, oh, so that's for the title, and this is the magazine. You can see they are attempting to be a little bit popular. Yeah, colour, an amusing picture. So here you have a woman who resembles some Indian goddess with several hands, but in fact she's got several hands because she's doing the ironing, and the telephoning, and the cleaning, and the cooking, and typing all at the same time. So obviously a reflection on what you call in French la double journée de travail, and the hard work involved. What else do we have in this one? An important intellectual writing about sisterhood. Somebody writing on raising kids without sex roles. We still see this discussion is continuing today. The debate is not finished. Women who tell the truth about their abortion. And Sylvia Plath's last major work, Sylvia Plath, a poet, who still has quite a lot of success until even after her death. 1972, then, the Ms. Magazine. I'm afraid I don't know how long Ms. Magazine lasted. I'm sure you remember that one of the tactics taken by the women's rights movements was to try to get an equal rights amendment to the US Constitution, just like there was the amendment to say that black people have the same rights to vote as white people. This is the amendment: equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. So that would be the equal rights amendment to the US Constitution, which would apply to every law in every state. But it was not ratified. It was passed by the Senate, but only 30 or 32, or not enough states ratified it. 38 states need to ratify it, and I think they had 10 years to count. And 10 years later, it was not ratified. And even today, if a state passes a law discriminating against women, this is not unconstitutional. Whereas to pass a racist law is unconstitutional in the United States, but to pass a state is not unconstitutional, which is, in my opinion, not a good thing. In 1973, then, there was some progress on abortion rights. High Court rules abortions legal the first 3 months. Okay, so abortions were to be legal for the first 3 months. This caused an enormous debate, but probably the strongest argument at the time for legality was not so much the strongest argument, the one that worked, the one that was effective, was not so much the questions of women's rights, but more the question of public health. So many women were dying with illegal abortions. Enormous numbers of women were dying. And so many politicians were saying, The problem is there will be abortions. If we think they're good, there will be abortions. If we think they're bad, there will be abortions. You cannot stop this. The only thing you could do is make it safe. And so that was the big argument which pushed through relatively solid rights in the United States. And this was mostly, this was decided on a national level by the Supreme Court. Was it the Supreme Court or the High Court? Now, this is the, I'm not quite sure which, I think it's the Supreme Court. Roe versus Wade is the case. This was a woman who had been raped and was pregnant and was refused, and she took it up to the top and won. And this is still, today, the case which means that it is not possible for any state to make abortion completely illegal. They're not allowed to because it's the Supreme Court which has decided. Decided that. Uh, 1981 was another first because these Supreme Court judges who decided, the Supreme Court judges who decided on the rights for abortion were all men. And it wasn't until 1981 when you got the first woman Supreme Court judge in 1981. That's an interesting case because in Britain we now have a Supreme Court too, which was established I think in 2000, but I don't know how many women there are on it. Sandra Day O'Connor, so she was a landmark in the sense that she was the first woman Supreme Court judge. And only 2 years later we had another first, and this is the first woman astronaut. The first woman astronaut. And as you can see, this was sufficient for her to get the front page of Ms. magazine. Sally Ride, astronaut, the world is watching. So this is 1983, so this is 10 years after the founding of Ms. magazine. Here you have then a list of the articles inside management. You also have in this magazine, at the top on the right, post-ERA politics, post-Equal Rights Amendment. So in 1983, the Equal Rights Amendment had failed, and this is a big discussion about it, losing a battle but winning the war, question mark. Special 16-page report. Yeah, so this is obviously an important thing. And otherwise, you have all sorts of just general interest articles, when a woman buys her dream house. But also some ethical questions as well. About adoption, and in particular overseas adoption. So I have another quiz for you because I've got to keep you awake. In what year did the first woman run for vice president for one of the major parties, Republican or Democratic? Who was the first woman in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? And when did the first woman become a four-star general in the U.S. Army? So let's take the easiest one first. Who was the first woman in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Anybody like to guess? Just think about the music your grandmother likes to listen to. Okay, we'll come back to that. Would be a good idea. I think probably a bit too oppositional, I think. But yes, I think it would be a good idea. She wasn't the first. So let's have a look at them then in order. 1984 was the first woman to run for vice president on a major party ticket, the Democratic Party. This was Geraldine Ferraro. She was in 1984 the candidate for vice president, and as I guess you understand, she didn't win. But she was the candidate. Whereas, of course, we're still waiting for the first woman president in the United States or in France. There she is, Geraldine Ferraro. This is the badge, of course, that people were wearing at the time. Aretha Franklin. Bon. Vous en avez entendu parler?
Yes.
Yeah. Vous saviez qu'elle va se marier avec Sean Connery? Elle va s'appeler Aretha Connery. Oh, je sors, c'est bon, d'accord. Yeah, okay. Aretha Franklin. Aretha Franklin. Respect. Je promets que c'est la pire blague du semestre. Okay. First woman inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Aretha Franklin, then, in 1987. In 1987. Again, I think these are the cultural milestones are tremendously important. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is not just about selling records. It's a place where we put the people who create imaginary worlds that we love. Rock music or other popular music is very important to people. And if all the greats are always men, that has an effect on society. These are not, in my opinion, these are not details. And finally, this is something else. C'était quoi la dernière question? Oh oui, on va y arriver au général dans un instant. 1994, a new law, the Violence Against Women Act, tightens federal penalties and funds services for victims of rape and domestic violence. The Violence Against Women Act. Okay. 1994, and this is a poster celebrating its 20th anniversary. So, in the United States, like in other countries, we have seen a shift in attitudes. 50 years ago, if somebody called the police because a man was beating his wife, the police could easily say, it's a domestic problem, it's a family problem, we're not really interested. And that's much more difficult today. Here we have a couple of more recent court cases. And court cases very important. First of all, Planned Parenthood versus Casey in 1992. This is the Supreme Court. And Planned Parenthood, as you can imagine, is an organization for reproductive rights. And the reason things changed in 1992 is that some of the Supreme Court judges had retired and they were replaced by more conservative judges. Now, the more conservative judges did not want to overturn Roe versus Wade and make abortion illegal again, but they wanted to make it more difficult. And so all of this went around, what is the definition of undue burden? The Supreme Court had declared no state must put an undue burden on a woman who wants an abortion. Donc, des limitations excessives, littéralement un fardeau inapproprié, undue burden. Now, you can see the difficulty with these court cases. How do you define undue burden? You know, it's very, very, limitations excessives. Define it, very, very difficult. And so here you had a decision by the Supreme Court that said it is not an undue burden if you make women wait for 24 hours. That in some countries and in some states in the United States, if you want an abortion, you must see one doctor and then wait 24 hours and then see another doctor. The idea is you're supposed to think about it. You're obliged to think about it. And this was the Supreme Court in this case in 1992 said, that's okay. That's not unconstitutional because it's not, in the opinion of the judges, an undue burden. Secondly, parental notification. In some states, young women can only have an abortion with their parents' permission. And this, again, the Supreme Court said, that's okay. Now, notice the Supreme Court is not deciding the law for all the states. The Supreme Court is deciding which laws are not unconstitutional and which laws are constitutional. The states make the law, but inside the limits. There are 100 books written about the Supreme Court. It's very, very, very. It's a whole area of study, which is very interesting because it's so different from here. But in this case. Another milestone in 2007 So you can see that Ms. Magazine is still there in 2007, so it's 1973, 83, 93, 2003. That's a successful magazine. Yeah. If you have your, if you found a magazine and it lasts for more than 40 years, you're pretty pleased with yourself. And Nancy Pelosi in 2007 became the first woman speaker. The speaker, c'est comme le président de séance. It doesn't mean just that she speaks. The first woman speaker in the US House of Representations. And you have this picture with, this is what a speaker looks like, which is a kind of joke. And here you have then some other articles, including then here, the beauty of Salma Hayek's Ugly Betty. Il y a des amateurs de la série Ugly Betty ici? Il y a des gens qui aiment ça? C'est un peu vieux maintenant. C'est un peu vieux maintenant. C'était très populaire il y a 10 ans. Okay. Oh, it was a little different. It was a little different. And there you go, there's the answer to your final question. And this may even be our final slide. That's in 2012, Janet Wolfenbarger was the first woman to become a 4-star general at the top of the United States Air Force. There was a certain amount of debates within the women's rights movements about this, because some women said, oh, this is good. It's excellent that we have women generals and men generals. And also, the United States government recently changed the rules and said women can fight at the front line. There is no limit to women's military roles. And so in the women's rights movement, some people said, oh, this is good, we have equal rights. And other people said, well, it would be better if there were no women and no men fighting in these wars. And so it became a controversial issue whether there are some roles which we just don't want women to do or men to do. And this is these are complicated debates. Yeah, that's what politics is all about. And I think we're getting to the end, but I had a little bit to say about equal pay. Equal pay, tremendously difficult, because it says here, and this is 2014, the wage gap stands at 23 cents. Women working full-time, not part-time, not on maternity leave, not as consultants, still earn only 77 cents to a full-time working man's dollar. That is to say that equal pay, the Equal Pay Act, imposes equal pay for the same job. But in fact, you see women, very many women in jobs which do not pay so well, and not so many women in jobs which pay well. And so the result is that on average in the United States, if women working full-time still only earn 77% of what a man earns. Various studies have shown that this affects very much family life. Because when you earn more money, you have more power in the family. But also, if you don't have enough money, and say, oh, well, there's two of us, one of us should go and work overtime, des heures supplémentaires, and the other one should work more at home. Well, it's obvious that if the man is earning more, then it's more logical for men to work overtime, so you have men working too many hours at work, and for women not to work overtime, so women are working too hard in the home and not sharing housework easily. These are if you have the perfect solution to this problem, you may become very famous, because we don't seem to have quite found it yet. There is still today ongoing debates and campaigns about abortion rights. And this is the present situation. 39 states require an abortion to be performed by a licensed physician. There you have the rest of the details there. And 41 states prohibit abortions after a specified point in pregnancy. These are debates and campaigns which continue to this day. You don't need every detail, and I will be putting the PowerPoint on the blog. If I don't do that, send me an email. Notice then here some of the restrictions. 32 states and also the District of Columbia prohibit the use of state funds for general abortion. So free abortion is not allowed, you know, paid for by the state, is not allowed in many states, except in quite extreme examples that the woman is in danger of dying, which is not generally the case. Yeah. Okay. So there you get the inference. And 8 states restrict coverage of abortion in private insurance plans. That is, that in 8 states, if you want health insurance which includes abortion, you can't have it. It's illegal. It's illegal to sell it. So you can see complex situation, but there's still, you know, still quite a lot. The idea that women it's a woman's right to choose is not generally accepted yet in the United States of America. That's enough of that. Oh my goodness me, much too much. Okay, so that brings us to today, and as you can imagine, there's a lot of debates around President Trump's policies, also about President Trump's personality, but also about his policies in connection with women, in particular because he is on record as having said things which are not very emancipatory, let's say. But this does divide people, although, of course, you have far more of the demonstrators on the bottom at the right, women against Trump. You also get the demonstrators on the top on the left. That's a demonstration of women for Trump. So there's a lot of debate and discussion going on about that. And naturally, the later, I'm sure you're aware of this because it got into the international news. The latest element in women's rights movements is the Me Too campaign. Me Too, ça veut dire moi aussi, pour ceux qui n'ont pas suivi. Okay, which was a very interesting kind of campaign. First of all, a campaign which depends on social media. Before the internet, it wouldn't be possible. Please write a letter to the newspaper saying Me Too. It's not going to happen, yeah? So interesting that Twitter in particular, but also Facebook and others, made this kind of campaign possible. And it took off in a very, very big way and allowed a number of other things. So in some places, there were actually demonstrations with Me Too. In other places, it at the top, you can see that it sparked discussions and debates. Me Too. At the bottom, you have a debate on Facebook. So something, a new kind of campaign, I think, quite a new kind of campaign, more aimed at raising awareness of women and men, more than making a particular legal change. So perhaps it's saying that, you know, legal changes are good, but culture changes slower. And also, finally, a very surprising movement. Nobody was expecting it. Nobody was expecting it at all. And although in the newspapers, if I may be allowed to give my opinion, although in the newspapers you see the famous actress and the famous directors, I think it probably makes quite a difference for the very ordinary person who works in a hospital and who needs to have the confidence to say this is acceptable, this is not acceptable. Although on the newspapers we see the famous people, I think it's pretty important for the not very famous people, which is most people really. Not many of us are going to be famous. I hope to be famous rock star someday. And very last find there, and I have an article about this, and that is, this is this perhaps hopeful cartoon which suggests that women are the people who can make President Trump become politically less important. I think that's the idea there. Yeah. What do people around you think about President Trump?